Today we're in sunny downtown Vancouver to visit with one of our favorite guests, Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist. Thanks for joining us, Mickey.
Thanks for having me once again, Matt.
And we're back in Vancouver, and one of the buzzwords, we're down at the conference center, and people are sort of saying junior mining is back. I saw that on a flyer down here, Mickey. And so I'm sort of wondering to start off how you feel about that.
Well, I think it's coming back. I don't think we're all the way there. I do, and this is well known, that have the opinion we are in an incipient bull market for commodities. You know, the bear market lasted arguably 5 years from the top to the bottom. Bottom January 20th of 2016, and it's been better. But it really is, I think, fits and starts, two steps forward, one step back. The encouraging thing is there's money being raised. There's money, plenty of money being raised over the last year or so. That's probably pros and insiders and the usual suspects.
As someone obviously who's out there looking at deals and doing your share of site visits, what is sort of some of the things or trends you're noticing in terms of maybe what people are looking for, where they're drilling, what sort of projects you might be looking at?
Yeah, I'm looking at startups. I think this is the time you do early stage deals. So one thing I've noticed is if you look at the recent conferences, there's a lot of new companies sprung up, names you don't recognize.
Yep.
Some of them, as opposed to the previous cycle, are not recycling old projects. So
that's nice to see.
I'm very encouraged by the idea that grassroots exploration is coming back,
yes,
which really is where the next round of metals, mines that supply the world, I think, have to come from those virgin plays and unexplored ground. And more of those things ended up being blind deposits drilled at depth. So I think that's where the business is going.
And I mean, that's a big issue, is a lot of the low-hanging fruit has obviously been taken, especially in North America. It's finding maiden ground here is just, it's not,
you know, Matt, I think low-hanging fruit is gone pretty much all over the world.
Yeah.
And it really started in the early 90s with that boom. And, you know, historically before that time, Canadian juniors had operated in Canada until perhaps, say, the early 80s. Then they went into the United States. I remember in the mid-80s when I was working for a major mining company, we were going, who are all these Canadians flooding in and taking profits? And then by the early 90s, exploration, the world was kind of the geologist's oyster.
Yeah.
And you're hard put to find ground that has not been trod anywhere in the world by a geologist at one time or the other.
Yeah, it was some time or another. And I mean, what we've been seeing also, and we talked a bit about this off air, and I've had a few other guests on, like Joe and Brent from Exploration Insights,
sure,
and things, talking a little bit about the M&A cycle. And we've seen, you've been familiar obviously with the Yukon situation. Both of us have been up there. We've seen Newmont now come in. Barrick with Attack is there now. So I'm wondering how you think, do you think the majors are back into that exploration more so now?
It kind of looks that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So they're moving into relatively unexplored terrains that have some sort of difficulties.
Infrastructure.
Infrastructure, remoteness, climate, versus what they chose to do in the previous cycle, which was to go all over the world in jurisdictions that had geopolitical risk, and for the most part they got bitten by that through resource nationalism or this or that. Now we see them moving into perceived safer jurisdictions, but still there's always risk in this early stage exploration plays.
Yeah, and you're seeing them take, you know, you hear that sort of buzzword district scale now, right? It's sort of, they're all on the lookout for, you know, it seems like if anyone has over 1,000 square kilometers worth of concessions, you probably have a CA with a major at this point, right?
No, the companies I cover that have those sorts of ground positions, and if you know the companies I cover presently, they all have huge land positions in relatively unexplored terrain, generally remote terrain, if you will. Not in all the cases, but buried deposits where you're looking at innovative new methods for exploration and discovery. And so that's where it's moving. I personally find that encouraging. So we didn't see that in the previous cycle. All we saw was recycle of projects that had failed previously, in some instances 4, 5, or 6 times they'd failed. And for the most part, they failed again. They are going to fail because they're just not good enough.
And as a geologist yourself, obviously, I mean, you just mentioned, I wanted to circle back on that word innovation. Have you seen some new stuff, geoscience things that people are doing out there that have sort of caught your eye?
Yeah, here's an example. Yeah. Seismic in Ireland is going to discover new, deeper, bigger zinc deposits, and that's already happened with Boliden discovered an extension off of Navan/Terra that is 2 to 3 times as thick with the significant grades that occur in the Irish lead, zinc lead deposits. So, and that was strictly due to seismic
technology,
modeling and deep drilling.
Yeah.
And so,
which is something from oil and gas.
Yeah.
People in oil and gas will be familiar.
So you're basically hiring oil and gas geophysicists to do your interpretation and it's a powerful tool. The drawback to seismic, extremely expensive.
Yeah.
So not particularly for the oil business, but the oil business for the most part is 1 to 2 orders of magnitude larger in terms of capital funds dedicated to particular projects. So,
well, yeah, what I always tell people with oil and gas, if they're from mining and not familiar with oil and gas, is that the path to cash flow is much shorter.
Shorter.
Yeah, so you get your payback on capital really quick,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But it's interesting to see some of those, because we've heard a bit about people using drone technologies and sort of new ideas that maybe they're taking from other industries or whatever. But
yeah, we got new drilling methods coming along, and we've got new geophysical methods and remote sensing in determining terrains to explore is getting better and better. And
which we need to. We need to do that, right?
Yeah, we have to, because there are just not that many outcropping ore bodies anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, there will continue to be ore bodies, ore deposit discovered from outcrops that perhaps have never been sampled before or sampled wrong or I said most ground have been trod in the world, but there's still significant areas that are essentially virgin. You know, a lot of Peru is so hard to access, and it's high altitude terrain.
Yeah.
You know, we still see people making ore grade outcrop discoveries in Nevada. So, you know.
Yeah. They're out there.
They're out there.
It just takes, it's people sometimes get lost with how big an area we're talking about. Like, people are always, we've had a lot of conversations about BC recently, because we did some studies and looked at it, and it really does look like the BC mining industry is slowing down. I mean,
there's probably a geopolitical risk involved in
that, too.
A new geopolitical risk involved in BC now.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah. And also, I mean, there just hasn't been, outside of Brucejack, that slate of discoveries that you're talking about, right? And a lot of what's left in BC is undercover.
Show me a BC deposit that was discovered in the last cycle that has proven to be a good mine.
Exactly.
Is there one?
No. I guess Brucejack to a degree, but it's
not a mine yet.
Yeah,
and it hasn't paid back its capital.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting deposit.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to be mined before it's known how much gold is actually there that can be mined.
Yeah.
It's
one
of these deposits cannot be modeled from drill holes very effectively.
No.
So there's risk there, but we'll see. We'll see if it works.
So
I hope it does.
It's old-fashioned mining where you're sort of just going along drift,
drifting along vein. Yeah, absolutely.
It's like what they used to do.
A lot of mines in Abitibi historically have done that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we did talk a little bit about, obviously, you're looking at earlier stage investment opportunities, but we haven't really touched on commodities too much yet. The speech you're giving tomorrow, I gather, is on copper. So maybe why don't you give us a little bit of a sneak peek on what your copper talk is.
Well, title of the talk is A Contrarian's Call on Copper, and I'm going to give the call as I see it on the the short, mid, and long-term fundamentals of the copper market. Most people are aware that I'm a bit of a perma-bull on copper in terms of a mid to long-term view because population increase in the world and annual demand on copper increases 3.4% per year on average since 1900.
Yeah.
So it's hard to buck that trend. We're not finding enough good copper deposits, but the real key to the whole thing is at the end of this talk, I'm going to give my newest copper pick.
So, oh, there you
go. And we're going to roll it out, and we're going to have my latest musing available immediately after my talk.
So, on the website.
Yep.
Mercenary Geologist, or Gold
Geologist. Well, and we're going to be giving free copies away at the booth here.
Perfect.
So,
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So bullish on midterm copper, or how are you seeing it?
Probably not particularly bearish in short term, which I would say
it's going to remain below $3.
Toward the end of the year. But mid to long term, extremely bullish. You know, there's some things going on in the copper market right now that maybe don't lend themselves to a quick bump in copper.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that it really has consolidated in this $2.50 to $2.70 range.
Yep.
And but we need $3 copper for this market, for anything to be looked at for development purposes requires a $3 to $3.30 a pound copper.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, like, we've talked about that before, to actually incentivize new development and more exploration, you're going to just simply need a higher price, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the bottom line with copper right now, we don't have a pipeline of things coming on to supply the additional demand that we know is going to happen.
Well, the funny one, I got a note was maybe from GMP or one of the analyst firms, and they were talking about Hudbay's Rosemont deposit, and they, I guess they put a recent updated feasibility out, and they use that as proof that they said this thing's not even going to work unless they get 330, and that's one of the better undeveloped copper from a grade profile, obviously not from a socio-political
it's
profile.
It's tough. Social issues, and it's southeast of Tucson, and it's Tucson's playground in the summer.
Yeah, and there are ocelots, like
the Patagonia area of Arizona. Yeah. And
but even aside from that, they were saying that based on the updated feasibility, sub $3
and
copper.
I think anybody will tell you, anybody who studies the copper market, that it's $3.30 before developments decisions can be positively made. And if you look at the average cost of producing a pound of copper worldwide, most companies are breaking even at best at this present price of
and those are probably the better mines with good gold credits too, right? And one of the other things we mentioned we wanted to chat about, because it was a little bit of a change in gears for you from the last time you were on the show, that was zinc. And you'd said historically you hadn't had a lot of involvement in zinc deals. But lo and behold, now you're looking at them.
Yeah, I think I probably stated more emphatically. I said I've never been a zinc guy. Not excited about zinc. And this was probably back in the late summer last year.
Yeah, about a year ago.
When I made that statement.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, that all changed for me.
Yeah.
I got presented with a zinc deal I really like, in Ireland, and I went in and started studying the let's say, midterm fundamentals of the zinc market, and I think we're due for a good zinc price for the next couple of years. So 2019, 2020, we have an extreme shortage of zinc concentrates right now.
Yep.
So historically, 25 years, I was of speculation as business. I was a perma bull on zinc, if you will. And, you know, you've got to be nimble. You've got to be quick. You've got to reassess your opinions. And I made a 180 on zinc.
Yeah, it's funny because I've done quite a bit of research myself on sort of the treatment and refining charges is something we follow when you're looking at the zinc market. And, I mean, anybody who has, like, sort of near-term discovery or production potential is, even if it stays at about the $1.20 to $1.50 range, are looking really good.
Right? I'm happy with that $1.20 range right now.
Yeah.
And, there's 2016, world zinc production was off over 6%.
Yeah, basically.
Because two mines, Century and Lachine, shut down. Century in 2015, Lachine last year.
Yeah.
And those were two giant mines, one in Ireland, Century in Australia, Lachine in Ireland. And, you know, zinc demand projected to increase in the near term of 5% a year.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that is viable in terms, but we have a zinc shortage right now. And
Glencore keeps saying they're not going to put their half billion tons back into production.
Right.
Even the last quarter, they said, we're not doing it, don't worry. But everyone's watching them being like, are you going to do it? Like, but they'd need, I think, higher, closer to $2.
So I saw a... Well, that would approach the historic high for zinc.
2006-07.
Yeah, right. Hit 208.
Yeah.
Before the when that commodity spiked before the global economic.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't think that's sustainable at all.
No.
Although I did see a report out of the UK this week that projected zinc price in 2017. This was written this month in May.
Yeah.
The overall zinc average price for 2017 of $1.41 a pound.
Wow.
Now, that's pretty friggin' bullish.
That is high.
And that means that zinc has got to take quite a rise here. I don't know if I see that, but...
Yeah, most of the price decks I've seen are about $1.20, $1.30.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's high. You know, that's a high one for sure.
It's been range-bound in this $1.15 to $1.20 range for a while.
Yeah.
You know, after the bloom fell off the rose, if you will, with the Trump infrastructure build out, and that was going to happen quickly.
Yeah.
It is not going to happen quickly, but if that comes to pass, that's extremely bullish for the industrial metals.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you, we've talked a lot of base, but gold's been a little funky lately, and some people have been talking about cryptocurrencies and what's going on with Bitcoin's running like crazy. But what's going on with gold? And gold's also been sort of stuck around 1250, sort of in a holding pattern there for the last little while here. What's your sort of outlook on precious metals right now?
Well, historically, we're going into a down period or approaching a downtime for the gold price.
Yeah.
Got summer doldrums coming. We would expect a seasonal low to occur for gold in sometime mid-June till the end of August. Didn't happen last year.
No, that's right.
But we would expect that. I'm
Would you happy. Buy? Would you buy at that? Are you looking at that? As
Am
an
I buying gold right now? Yeah. Physical gold? No. If I'm buying precious metals, I buy platinum on dips because I think it's undervalued with respect to gold.
Okay.
But I'm certainly looking at and speculating in gold explorers.
Yeah.
And
see upside in discovery more so than the actual bullion price.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me. And I mean, you also hear a bit about it sort of fell off, but for a while there I was hearing about silver. And I know being from the U.S., silver is a bigger deal than it is in Canada.
Not for you, but
narratively, right? Is there still any sort of appetite for silver, really?
You know, I'm probably the wrong guy to ask. Go talk to David Morgan. I really have never been a silver bug. You know, I think that the present ratio of gold to silver is on the historically high end.
Yeah.
I get interested in buying silver when that ratio is above 80.
Okay.
And it's in the low 70s right now.
That's right. Yeah.
I think it will correct back down to a more normal range of, say, plus or minus 55, that ratio. The trouble with buying silver, it's poor man's gold, and if you buy silver bullion, I think you buy it when silver is undervalued, with the idea when silver is overvalued, you sell it and turn that into gold bars.
Yeah.
The trouble with silver plays is they're not silver plays. They're lead and zinc plays for the most part, and sometimes copper plays, because there, to my knowledge, there really aren't any pure silver producers in the world. They produce base metals, and they may generate most of their profits from the silver content when silver prices are good. Hard to play to find silver plays in ore.
But just to wrap up here, Mickey, the other thing I wanted to mention, you did say you were looking at discovery stories and explorers, and you were looking at copper. And I wanted to ask you if there's anywhere in the world that you're seeing some exciting things emerging specifically. I mean, we hear a lot about Peru, obviously, right now, that there's some good stories going on in Peru. I covered Camino Minerals a while back. They had a nice drill hole. But I'm wondering if there's any sort of jurisdictions you're looking at that might offer opportunities.
Yeah, you have to come to my talk tomorrow hear about my newest copper pick. But that said, and I do have a slide in that talk that it rhetorically asks, where is the copper going to come from?
Yeah.
And there are problems in just about every major copper jurisdiction in the world of one type or the other, either geopolitical problems or grade problems or depth to new high-grade deposits. And so the solution to this is technology and innovation is going to continue as the demand continues, going to allow us to find, develop, and mine deeper, higher grade deposits. The grade historically of copper mined, as with all commodities, continuously goes down with time. We're not going to run out of copper. We may have short-term supply deficits and oversupplies within that market. World has plenty of copper. We just got to go out and find it.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is there's a lot of I think calling them marginal deposits would be a little kind right now, but there's a lot of in situ, in the ground, that we know is there, that if copper, if we ever need it, it's there.
Right.
A lot of those deposits are actually in BC, funny enough, but we do know that it's there, like you said, so it's just a question of getting, you know, finding that price that incentivizes, A, the discovery, and B, the actual development.
Yep.
Right? And that's what we'll be looking at moving forward. But once again, I would like to thank Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist, for swinging by.
Thanks once again, Matt. My pleasure.
And this has been Matthew Keeble with the Northern Miner Podcast. As usual, we are brought to you by the Yukon Mining Alliance. Have a great day. Welcome back to studio. And just a spoiler here, this is running a little later than we had intended. So Mickey's talk on copper has already happened. It was on Monday at 1:40 at the Metal Writers Conference. His new copper pick, I'm going to spoil this for Mickey, is Trilogy Metals. So he announced that at the show. I was there for that talk, so we won't actually get that. Unfortunately, he was playing a little coy there, but due to the timing, we can sort of reveal that now. So Trilogy and the Bornite Arctic Project, which we discussed maybe last week's podcast, South 32 just made a big earn-in agreement up there in Alaska in the Ambler Mining District. So that's Mickey's new copper pick for people who are interested. Swing by his website at mercenarygeologist.com. You can read up on that. I believe it's a free subscription model. So thanks again to Mickey Fulp for swinging by and joining us. That sort of concludes our quote-unquote macro commodity segment of the show.